Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. This is the Zabe Cast. From the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go! Here we go! Tuesday, February 24, 2026. Thank you for downloading today's podcast. I'm going to guess is going to get skipped by a large portion of my regular audience, and I'm okay with that. Generally speaking, I don't aim to have unpopular or low-rated or low-downloaded podcasts, but every now and then I will break the rules just because I believe it's important. So, with that said, this podcast is going to be looking back at the Penn State scandal with Joe Paterno and Jerry Sandusky. It comes on the heels of my recent visit to Penn State for the first time I'd ever been up there. My sister-in-law has a son, Luke, who went through there, loved every bit of it. As you know, Scott Lynn has a son who will be graduating from Penn State this coming spring and has loved his experience there as well. I did go on with Scott and Sally a week ago, and I talked about my visit up there and just what I had sort of come to understand and appreciate better, seeing it, feeling it, being there. And I want to play for you that discussion first, and then we'll lead into my guest today, who is John Ziegler, who you've heard on this podcast before. He's not everybody's cup of tea, I get that, but he is the foremost expert on the whole Penn State abuse scandal. And we will let him give his explanation of what he believes the end result really was. But let me set the table by playing for you my little 12-minute discussion. I've pared it down from the Lynn Murray Sally podcast, now with very little Murray, which is a good thing for all of us, where you can support them, by the way, on Patreon. I join them every week on Tuesdays, not this week because I'm traveling. But this was my discussion with the boys about the whole situation. I was up there at Penn State just because my sister and brother-in-law co-own with their brother a little three-bedroom townhome, basically, triplex that's a couple miles from campus. It's only a mile. It's just right next to the airport, basically. So they rent it out for big weekends, and there's not only
I may have rented it through the years and not known, by the way.
You might have. There's also Thon Weekend, their big fundraising dance thing, which is incredible. There's also graduation weekends. There's other stuff, right? And so we were up there just because it was my wife's birthday and it was Valentine's Day and we wanted to get away. So we did. And it was just cool seeing a little bit. I didn't really walk on campus per se or walk around town. We went to the stadium and went to lunch, and then I just kind of chilled at the place. But walking through their museum is incredible. They have this athletic museum, which, have you been through it, Scott?
I have not been through it, no.
Okay, it's really? In the stadium. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in the stadium, and it has tons of artifacts. and collectibles and vintage stuff, of which I took some little short videos. I sent you the video, Scott. You saw some of the old vintage stuff, like a Penn State sweater, jersey sweater from 1927, and footballs from even older than that. Crazy. But it dawned on me as I'm just absorbing the pride of the place and the nice woman, 65-year-old-ish woman who was giving us the quick tour,
the
talking
docent.
About how, yes, she said, I got season tickets to the new Beaver Stadium when they disassembled it and moved it across campus to where it sits now, because that's what they did with it. And then they just kept building and building and building. And to see the lettering, the simple lettering of the Pennsylvania State University.
That big brick sign that's on the corner that a lot, like the grad, you know, you go up there in spring and the graduates go there. It's like part of the photo shoot.
Right. It just struck me, Scott, how deep the pride and how long and significant the history of that institution is and how much people love it. Because every Penn Stater I know loves it to death. We are Penn State.
Yep.
How much is redacted from that last 20-something years?
And so as I was saying at lunch...
No mention of Paterno here. How interesting.
And as I was saying at lunch, I tried to explain this to both my wife and my daughter. I said, you know, the Paterno thing, I feel like I know my part in it. And we talked about this when it was going on. Was this 2012, I want to say?
2011. It started.
It wasn't my finest hour because I did not avoid getting swept up in some of the easy media narratives that were almost too good to check and too good to not believe in. My daughter's like, well, what do you mean by narrative? I go, well, it was simple. Assistant coach for powerhouse football program, sexually abusing young boys in the showers of the university. Head coach hears about it, looks the other way because, ooh, we got to win football games. Right? That was the basic narrative. Right?
That was it, yeah. No.
But reality is far more complicated, nuanced, and shrouded in gray areas. So I started to try to explain to her, you know, all of the gray areas, and it was clear that she felt like, well, I need to learn more about this. Have you listened to a guy we know, John Ziegler, and his podcast with the benefit of hindsight?
I have not.
He started a whole podcast that dug deep into, hold on a second, and really talked to and investigated things. He actually got a discussion with Sandusky in prison, smuggling in a tape recorder to talk to him, which was unique. And I listened to a good chunk of that podcast, and there's so many things that you're like, okay, wait a minute. That was never really said. Because I said, look, the assistant coach, the low-level assistant, McQuarrie, who went in and supposedly saw this happening, he just walked out and then went and reported it. And then Joe Pa's like, so you saw what exactly? Horsing around in the showers? And Joe Pa kicked it up to Curley and Schultz, the two stooges running things.
And Spanier, Graham Spanier. Remember
Graham Spanier, the university president.
Right. No relation to Arnie. Exactly.
Curley was the AD. Schultz was like the head of security or something. I forget.
The three stooges, Curley, Schultz, and Spanier. There's even a Curley in there. So don't wear that shirt up there.
The grand jury testimony was not completely accurate in terms of how things lined up. They had a lot of the timelines wrong about when this abuse could have happened. The relationship that Sandusky had with these young boys that were at his camps was murky, where you're like, that seems inappropriate, but was there actual abuse going on? He boarded some of these kids from the second mile. Was it third? Which mile was it?
This is the third mile. The second the mile was finished. Let's go to the third mile. I don't remember.
He boarded some of these kids who are from bad backgrounds with him and his wife at their house. There was
second mile. Yes.
Second mile. There was a bunch of accusations that came out and lawsuits that came out, some of which were just naked money grabs because, okay, the floodgates are open. Joe Pa's been fired. That's a tacit admission that there was abuse going on. So any kid in their family who had any contact with Sandusky over the years were like, sookie, sookie, Let's go get some of that money.
Well, McQueary got paid, too, for defamation and libel. That's why you haven't seen him coach anywhere. He's sitting on an island sipping Mai Tais because he's got lots of money now. So
yeah, so, like, I do think Joe Pa got a raw deal.
That's right. Finally saying it. Yeah.
And I think that it's very easy in retrospect to go, he should have put on his Superman cape and flown around and gotten to the very bottom of every little thing that might have been happening and said, oh, my God, stop this. What's going on? And that was unrealistic in retrospect. It was unrealistic for almost anybody, I think. And I feel bad because when we were at the peak of talking about this scandal, I think I called Joe Pa son of a bitch on the air. And you know who called me on it, Scott? And he was very emotional about it.
Franco Harris.
Once played baseball with a young Joe Paterno back in the day. Our friend Stan
Gans. Stan Gans, that's right. That's right.
Stan Gans, the Forrest Gump of our era.
God rest his soul, Stan.
Who knew everybody. Sure.
Yeah. I look at that and think back, and I'm like, yeah, I kind of got swept up into it. It doesn't mean that I believe that Sandusky's innocent. By the way, Ziegler believes there's a strong probability that he is innocent completely.
Sandusky is innocent? He didn't do anything?
So according to Ziegler, there were no victims? Or, because again, I don't know Ziegler's presentation at all.
It's a long,
because that's a lot of people to lie, a lot, and a lot of people to be scarred for lives.
Him and Larry Nassar made it all up. No, not really.
Yeah, I don't know if I. You
that's
know,
hard
again,
to
I don't know.
Hard to believe.
I know. From Adam,
but Sean Watson, completely innocent.
Right. But do you remember the quick follow on of the Syracuse scandal that followed this?
Bernie Fine?
Yes, because now all of a sudden the media was like, oh, this is catnip. We got to look under every rock for potential abuse stories. And the Bernie Fine situation was extremely flimsy and not as nearly rooted in fact based on things. Sexual abuse is a horrible, horrible thing that wrecks lives and tears families apart, and I'm firmly against it. But to pretend like it's always black and white is naive. It's not. Sometimes it's complicated, gray, weird, and hard to fully decipher what is going on here. So I just feel bad. Like, it struck me about how wounded I'm sure Penn State must have been 15 years ago when this all arrived.
I'm sure they still are today. I mean, again, you just got to experience a little bit of it. I can say that in the 4 years, and Justin will graduate, you know, God willing, he'll graduate in a couple of months. And then, but he certainly knows of the story, how much is on him. He's now 21 years of age. But when we go up there, you still see, of course, you're always going to see people with Paterno scarves and hats and the 409 pin and what have you. That's never going to go away. I would say that it's I don't even want to call it a fracture. I don't know if 15 years later they've made peace, the whole community.
I think
it's a scar. It's a scar.
I was very much in tune with how this is a community. They love this institution. The institution is a monster in size, mm-hmm. scope, and even though they don't produce much in the way of basketball stars, football, they have had a huge thumbprint on football in America for a century plus.
Who'd they hire? Who's their new coach now? I've already forgotten who it is.
The Iowa State, Matt Campbell.
Oh, yeah, Campbell. Matt Campbell. That's right. Franklin, gone. Virginia Tech.
Yeah, man. Virginia Tech. Exactly. So onward and upward, and, you know, the renovation is, what, underway or mostly underway?
Yeah,
or mostly
they're
complete.
They're putting in some...
No statue, though. No statue. Couldn't find a statue.
They're making it bigger, Sally. Bigger and cooler with club seats. The halo.
Get Ziegler
on
finding the statue. Ziegler, go find the statue. It's got to be some... You can't lose a statue. It's not like...
I'm going to reach out to Ziegler and see if I can have him on with us to give the 20-minute...
Oh, God.
I will challenge him. I'll say, John, you've done a 58-hour multi-episode podcast about this. That's wonderful. You need to boil it down to 20 minutes. The 20-minute condensed version of what you think really happened. Maybe he can do it, maybe not. I didn't pay attention a lot in science class in high school. No shock there. But I wish I had, at least when it comes to this. When I hit my 30s and 40s, I started to realize You know, that same diet that would keep me lean, it's not working anymore. I'm soft around the middle. Energy crashes at 2 o'clock became sort of normal. I figured that's not supposed to happen. So I went full hypochondriac, Googling symptoms, low T kept popping up. You know, doctors act like TRT is casual, weekly shots forever. Well, I dug deeper. $3,000 a year to shut down your natural production? Yeah, no, that kind of terrified me. So this new year, I'm turning the clock back with the natural way, with Mars Men. It's a potent stack of ingredients, things I can't even pronounce. Tonget, Ali, Shalgit, Zinc, Boron, and more. All of it optimizes your body's own testosterone production. Same benefits, steady energy, stronger lift, sharp focus, no needles, no synthetics, or shutdown. No dependency either. Just real ingredients supporting stamina and recovery. Made in the USA, third-party tested, and with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Over 91% of guys report higher energy. I've been on it, and honestly, more consistent drive, energy, focus all day long, actually starting to walk more, feeling way better in 2026 than I have in years. Check out the reviews at mengotomars.com and find out more. No risk and a huge upside. That's mengotomars.com and find out the better way to work on your low T.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code audio.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. And with that said, it's my pleasure now to welcome on independent journalist, former radio host, columnist, and now podcaster, whose podcast can be found wherever you get yours. The one about Penn State is called With the Benefit of Hindsight. There is a follow-on podcast called The Death of Journalism, which is also very fascinating to listen to. Depressing, but also fascinating. And he is John Ziegler. Hi, John. How are you? Well, what do you make of my synopsis?
Well, you heard my setup. You think you're up for the challenge?
Absolutely. And you're the perfect man to participate with on this. You're one of the few people in the sports media with the brains to understand this very complex but extraordinary story.
Thank you. Accountability and a open mind and a curious mind are things that I know are not helpful in this business, but I can't shake having them. And so having listened to you do your exhaustive research into this, I've found it very fascinating. And really what I want is to have a good 20 to 30 minute sort of condensed, here's the nuts and bolts of what maybe you haven't heard, so that when my daughter on a visit to Penn State, as you heard, wants to know more about, well, why is it not as cut and dry as you think, they'll have this 30 minutes.
Well, let's do it. I actually think that your story is integral to understanding how we got in this problem, because everything about this case, everything is upside down. People presume that those with a connection to State College or Penn State would be the most likely to be saying, wait a minute, there's more to the story. It didn't really happen. When in fact, it's the opposite. Because what's unique about this. There's so many unique aspects to this case. But one of them is that when Jerry Sandusky was arrested and charged and put on trial for heinous crimes against children, the entire community of Penn State and State College felt as if, and in many ways in the media, they really were being implicated in this. So their instinct was to throw Jerry Sandusky and even Joe Paterno and Penn State under the bus as far as they possibly could to show the world, hey, we don't have anything to do with child sex abuse. We don't defend this. We're not enabling this. And this became a university-wide problem where Penn State University, in the middle of a moral panic back in November of 2011, they completely crapped the bed. They panic to an 11 out of 10 scale. They fire Joe Paterno, who's, you know, the guy who literally put them on the map. They fire a very well-respected university president, Graham Spanier. And so everyone, and this is so key. This is so, so key to understanding everything that happens in this case. Everyone understandably presumes that's Penn State pleading guilty on behalf of not just Jerry Sandusky, but Joe Paterno and Graham Spanier and the administrators. That's the way the media took it. That's the way most of the public took it. And the reality is exactly the opposite. What really happened in those first few critical days was that a very PC university panicked. They took blame for things that never happened. They committed horrendous acts of malpractice when it came to administration. They did things they should not have done, and they pled guilty in a way that set up a domino effect of injustice that still has never ended today in what I believe, very strongly believe, and having devoted 14 years of my life to this story, is the most obvious case of massive injustice in the 21st century in America. And it's not close. No. That's the most amazing thing. It's not close.
Well, the whole thing about moral panic, there's two kinds of people in the world. Those who understand what that is and how it can happen, and everybody else. And if you don't understand, if you can't get your head around it, you're going to have a hard time understanding the dynamics at play. Because at the time, I remember this, any support of Paterno, any support of simple due process was to be cast as an absolute heretic, and you would have been publicly tarred and feathered. Like, can you believe this radio host, journalist, columnist, TV host actually said, hold on a second, I want to know more. What are you, in favor of covering for pedophiles?
Exactly.
So there was no ability to slow anything down. It went straight downhill, and it went downhill fast.
And it's only in that environment, what you just said there is so important, it's only in that environment where an injustice of this magnitude can happen, because no one is willing to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, does this make sense? What are we doing here? What is this based upon? What are the facts here? Can we not jump to conclusions, rush to judgment, and create a narrative that you've already referenced? The narrative is so important here. It's so powerful. It comes right out of the Catholic Church scandal, which was huge in Pennsylvania. Everyone thinks they've seen this movie before. They think Joe Paterno, oh, that's the Pope. The Penn State administrators, those are the cardinals covering this up.
Right.
Jerry Sandusky, he's the pedophile priest abusing children. And the Penn State football fans are just like Catholic parishioners looking the other way in order to protect their sacred institution of football. That all sounds, I guess, plausible. And we think we saw the movie before, but when you look at the facts, all of that breaks down completely. It collapses. None of that was true. It set people up for buying into a false narrative. And then once that narrative is set, it's all over, especially in this day and age where social media is dominant. The sports media in particular is totally incompetent. No one has any courage. No one wants to admit they were duped. No one ever wants to revisit something, especially when massive amounts of damage have been done. I mean, yeah. For instance, Duke Lacrosse got revisited and effectively fixed, although not totally. But that's because Duke Lacrosse never got to the level of Penn State, Sandusky, Paterno, as far as the damage that was done. There was still an opportunity to fix that. This got way too big, way too much damage. And you put your finger on it, as you're so apt to do in your setup for this. This all comes down to the most infamous episode that everyone still thinks they know. They may vaguely remember now, all these years later, and now we're, 14, 15 years after this became a major story. But it all comes down to the so-called Mike McQueary episode, where everyone thinks that a then assistant coach at Penn State came into a Penn State shower and witnessed Jerry Sandusky sexually abusing brutally what was supposedly a 10-year-old boy. And I totally get why that made heads explode back in November of 2011. And everyone said, oh, my gosh, this can't. If this happened, burn the place down. Give Penn State the death penalty. Fire everyone. Fire Paterno. Put Jerry Sandusky in prison the rest of his life. I totally 1,000% get it. But guess
but there's
what?
More, there's so much more. Yeah, there's so much more to it. And you mentioned 14 years. It dawned on me, holy shit, time is flying. And it seems like yesterday, but 14 years. I will have on occasion, because I work with some younger producers and on-air hosts in radio who are in their 20s, John. So 14 years from them, they were 10 years old. They don't know anything about this.
Right.
One of my favorite little gotcha things that I will say to them sometimes if this ever comes up, and it doesn't come up often, but occasionally it does, I say, you know that whole McQueary shower thing? That was a bank shot off a mirror, and he walked out. And they go, what? What? I go, yeah. Yeah, he allegedly saw in a reflection in a mirror something weird, heard some noises, and then decided to just leave and go report it. Didn't even walk up to go, hey, what are you doing here? What's going on? And people, the younger generation that don't know the details, they're blown away by this.
Well, you just hit on the very tippy top of the iceberg of this particular case, because what you just said is 100% accurate. That's based upon Mike McQueary and his own testimony. This is not something John Ziegler's making up for his podcast with the benefit of hindsight. This is what his own testimony was. He never claimed to have seen anything. He said he heard, and that what he only identified Jerry Sandusky, as you said, through a reflection in a mirror. Where, there's even questions whether or not that was physically possible, given the makeup of the shower at the time. But to me, the first episode of our podcast with the benefit of hindsight is really the key to this whole scenario. And the title of that episode is The Date, because to me, you can break down and totally collapse the so-called Mike McQueary episode simply by understanding the truth of the date. I guarantee you that to those that even have any memory of this story, 99-point-something% have no idea that all of this story, Joe Paterno's entire career was destroyed, and other people's lives and careers were also destroyed, based upon a 10-year-old story of an episode where Mike McQueary testified incorrectly about the date, the month, and the year in which it happened.
Now, right. You dug exhaustively into how, hold on a second, he said it was this time, but there's other evidence that shows it could not have been at this time. And these are all crucial things. If you even had direct eyewitness, I saw it 4 feet in front of me testimony, he didn't even have that. And so all of that as the starting point, it began to snowball quickly, because there's so many more levels I want to get to. The other part that I think people completely misunderstand is that grand jury indictments too often are viewed as often very accurate or ironclad, or they have to be true because, oh my God, it's a grand jury indictment, and that's not at all the case.
That's incredibly important to this story. Just real quick on the date, the prosecution was forced to acknowledge at Jerry Sandusky's trial that they got the first date wrong by 13 months, but I believe in our podcast with the benefit of hindsight that we've proven that second date was also catastrophically wrong. And here's why it's important. Because Mike McQuarrie waited 6 weeks. 6 weeks to go see Joe Paterno. And the reason why he went to go see Joe Paterno was not because he had seen Jerry Sandusky raping a boy in a shower the night before.
He needed a new job.
It was because there was an open job. Kenny Jackson had left Penn State to go to the Pittsburgh Steelers. He wanted the wide receivers coaching position, which, by the way, he did not get that year, which blows apart the entire cover-up theory. But he does get it 3 years later when it opens up a second time, which shows us that McQuarrie wanted that job. That's why he was motivated to go see Joe Paterno. So the date thing is so important, but the grand jury element of this, the media buys in so completely to this idea, because even the name, right? Grand jury, right? That sounds really official. That sounds powerful. That sounds credible. Grand juries in these types of situations are garbage. It's about 30 people who, in this particular case, by the way, the grand jury that indicted Sandusky didn't even hear most of the witnesses, didn't even hear that Mike McQuarrie there was this confusion over whether or not they even listened to victim number one, Aaron Fisher. So there were multiple grand juries that were impaneled, a couple of which did not indict. It's incredibly easy to get a grand jury to indict anybody if the prosecution wants them to. All a grand jury is a prosecution without any opposition whatsoever, throwing everything they have against the wall, seeing what sticks, and then if they get an indictment, they know that the media is going to run with that because the media is a bunch of morons and they, oh my God, he's been indicted by a grand jury. That gives credibility to all of this. When in fact, they used the grand jury indictment as a weapon. They knew they had a crappy case. This is 100% true what I'm telling you. They knew they had a crappy case against even Jerry Sandusky, but they thought if we explode this story with massive amounts of media coverage, we get an indictment and an arrest, all of a sudden, out of the woodwork, our current accusers are terrible. They're changing their stories. They don't make any sense. Some of them seem pretty sketchy. We don't have anybody that's really strong as far as a witness is concerned. But just wait. We're convinced that Jerry Sandusky is a serial pedophile. So if we arrest him and we get all this media coverage, out of the woodwork, we're going to get far better accusers that maybe aren't looking to make millions of dollars out of this and haven't already hired plaintiff's attorneys. But guess what happened? Remarkably, unbelievably, considering the massive amounts of publicity, what the prosecution got after Jerry Sandusky's arrest, they got a ton of publicity. That's for damn sure. They got garbage. They got garbage. In fact, one of the two accusers that came forward after the arrest that testified at Jerry Sandusky's trial, number 10, Ryan Rittmeyer, has recanted his testimony. He did an interview with me.
Yeah, that's not good.
For 3 hours.
That's not good.
The mom of the other accuser came forward then has recanted her testimony. She was a major prosecution witness. I mean, the whole thing in the rational world has fallen apart, but the media won't tell you this.
We'll get to the other victims because that's a key component of this whole story in just a second. But back to your thing about grand juries. What's the saying? A grand jury could indict a ham sandwich?
Exactly.
I wish more people knew that actual phrase and knew what it meant. So you said there were other grand juries impaneled that came back and said, we got nothing. That's another very little understood and very little reported fact about all of this. So just so I'm clear, at this point, when the McQuarrie thing was the spark in the pile of tinder and hay that lit off the brush fire,
correct?
Was there any other of the victims who ended up getting paid or those that did not change their story that testified in court, had anyone else come forward with any allegations against Sandusky?
This is how the story begins. And you always have to go to the epicenter. You have to go to the start of a story like this because that's where you'd find out, okay, is this based in truth or was this a snowball of deception that turned into an avalanche? And what happens here is this is the indictment is the end of a three-year investigation of Jerry Sandusky, which begins with one teenage heterosexual boy. It was 16 at the time of the beginning of the investigation by the name of Aaron Fisher. Now, Aaron Fisher is so-called victim number one or accuser number one. He tries to testify in front of the grand jury, not once, but twice, and cannot do it. He fails. He starts starts crying. They have to cancel his testimony. The third time, I'm not making this up. This is not an exaggeration. The third time, he reads his testimony with his therapist, who facilitated this testimony, sitting right there with him in front of the grand jury. By the way, still no indictment from the grand jury, despite three attempts to get him to testify. This case is going nowhere. They're about to.
So this was not Aaron Fisher reporting a crime, saying Jerry Sandusky did this to me, and I'm reporting it as a crime. He was just alerting the authorities, and he was testifying before a grand jury as to whether or not they should bring in charges. Correct?
I think a pretty fair way of looking at it. But he was making the allegation, or trying to make
an allegation. He was making an allegation.
That Jerry Sandusky had sexually molested him. Now, there's all sorts of problems with Aaron Fisher's story.
Well, those are tricky gray areas, obviously. You know, I mean, a lot of the abuse is genuine and it's suppressed and the victims don't want to think about it and they have a hard time talking about it. But a lot of it is also induced by therapists or family members who put ideas in their head about something that was not abuse. And then their mind gets to running on that. So that's a tricky one right there.
Well, be clear, in this particular situation, we have a witness. We have a witness that I've interviewed. You can find it on YouTube. It's very easily found, who was there when Aaron Fisher told his mother, who was a key figure in all this, and she made millions of dollars of this story, bought lots of luxury cars. When Aaron Fisher, he was their neighbor, literal neighbor in welfare housing. He witnessed Aaron Fisher telling his mom this story, and he immediately determined it was all BS. And in great detail, he tells me, Josh Fravel is his name. He tried to tell Jerry Sandusky's defense attorneys. He tried to tell a reporter for the New York Times. No one would listen to him. He's exceedingly credible. The real story here is that Aaron Fisher was a teenage boy who was already having sex with girls, didn't want to be forced to hang out with Jerry Sandusky. His mom was using Jerry Sandusky as a babysitter so she could go out drinking. And Aaron figured out the best way to get rid of Jerry Sandusky was to tell his mom that Jerry Sandusky made him feel uncomfortable. That's what happened. And from there, it snowballs to a story, not to the police, but to the school district. The school district goes, what are you talking about? This is crazy. And then they finally get an investigator. They go to the police. They go to the grand jury. Aaron Fisher still can't testify. Like I said, three times, no indictment. But it's at that moment, it's after 2.5 years of going nowhere, almost quitting on this investigation, that Mike McQueary's story falls in their lap. And that does two things. It gives them what they think is a corroborating witness, but it also creates a political incentive because Tom Corbett is the Attorney General of Pennsylvania. He wants to be governor at that time. He becomes governor. He has an absolute vendetta against a very liberal president of Penn State University, Graham Spanier. And Corbett sees this investigation as a weapon to get Spanier. And lo and behold, what ends up happening? Graham Spanier, I know him very well. I mean, he and I disagree on everything. I'm a conservative. He's a liberal. I have spoken to him dozens and dozens of times. I've interviewed him for hours and hours and hours in this case. He's written a very extensive book. He's an incredibly good guy, an abuse victim as a child himself. Had absolutely nothing to do with this story. Nothing at all. Yet he goes to prison. He gets fired. There was a political in vendetta here, an agenda that played a huge role in this story.
All right. So there's two tracks. I want to get on the Paterno track because oftentimes people will talk about Paterno. And if I dare to say, okay, well, so what did you want him to do? Because there was reporting of a very vague recollection by McQueary about a bank shot heard, might have seen incident. And it was not even presented to Paterno like, this absolutely happened. We have a huge problem. You need to get on it. Paterno did what he thought was the right thing. It just wasn't enough. And so all of the Monday morning quarterbacks wanted
you know, Joe Paterno to be Superman, to be some combination of Matlock and CSI Happy Valley, and to solve this thing unto himself. And I just felt that was completely insane to assume.
There's two ways to defend Joe Paterno here. If everything we were told about this story is true, which is 100% not, as we've already, I think, proven, but even if it was all true, Joe Paterno did absolutely nothing wrong. He did exactly what's in the NCAA handbook to do, which was he passed McQuarrie's story up to his superior, the athletic director at Penn State, who immediately investigated it with a senior vice president, Gary Schultz. So he did absolutely nothing wrong. Jerry Sandusky was a former assistant coach at this time. Now, so it wasn't even under Joe Paterno's authority at that time.
It wasn't
time.
Like they were going to lose the best coordinator in the country if he was found to be guilty of these things. He had already retired.
He had already retired.
So that motivation.
And with honors, because they were offering a special deal for Penn State employees to retire. His retirement had absolutely nothing to do with this. He coached for two more years after announcing his retirement. The back page of Sports Illustrated when Jerry Sandusky retires is a glowing endorsement of what an amazing guy he is. By the way, one of the people quoted in that back page story at Sports Illustrated is Matt Sandusky, his adopted son, who would many years later become an accuser because it was the only way for him to make some money out of this whole story, and he's a complete and total fraud. But let's pretend that I'm right, because I am, and that most, if not all, of this story is utter balderdash. I actually think so much of this story is not just false, it's the opposite of the truth. As we started this story, Joe Paterno actually was too tough on Jerry Sandusky. He didn't like Jerry Sandusky.
Privileges to the facilities after this report,
right?
And that was perceived in a way that was used as an admission of guilt, not as I'm being too hard on you.
One of the things that really struck me, and people need to understand, I started my investigation looking at Joe Paterno because it didn't make any sense to me that Joe Paterno was covering up sex abuse for a former assistant coach. Made no sense at all, and the facts didn't make any sense. So I did a documentary film called The Framing of Joe Paterno. We got a website called Framing Paterno. I was presuming through the first year and a half of my investigation that Jerry Sandusky must be guilty of at least most, if not all, of this stuff. That was my presumption. One of the first moments I started to think this might not be real at all was when I interviewed him in prison for the first time. As you already told your audience, I brought in secretly a recording device, a pen that had an audio recorder, because I knew no one would believe me or care what I had to say about Jerry Sandusky unless I had his voice. I ended up going on the Today Show to do an interview with Matt Lauer with that audio. But one of the most startling things, and there were many things that were amazing about that interview, 3.5 hours, was that Jerry Sandusky had open disdain for Joe Paterno. Now, I'd ask people to think for themselves logically. If this story was true, and Jerry Sandusky was a serial child pedophile, which is an illness, okay? Something he's been fighting his entire life. He would know, unless he was a complete and total sociopath, that he was the one that destroyed Joe Paterno's career, his life, and caused him to die. There would be at least some guilt involved in that. There would be consciousness of guilt. I can't believe what I did to Joe Paterno. But Jerry Sandusky doesn't have an ounce of consciousness of guilt, and he actually knows that it was Joe Paterno's testimony that is the reason he's in prison. Without Joe Paterno's testimony, they never even arrest Jerry Sandusky. Never even arrest him.
So at this point, a wildfire of a moral panic is ravishing through Happy Valley.
Yes.
And here's Paterno, the icon, surrounded by the flames. Was there any way, as you look back now, that he could have firewalled him off and somehow survived this? Or was this moral panic fire too great for even him to survive?
That's a great question. You know, his son, Scott Paterno was his quote unquote lawyer at the time. Scott and I hate each other's guts with a white hot passion. And it's important to understand that is actually a really important part of the story and understanding what transpired, because Scott became invested in the whole Mike McCreary mythology because that was his advice to his father, was to throw Jerry Sandusky under the bus, embrace Mike McCreary. That was the totally wrong strategy because it wasn't based in truth and it clearly didn't work out. I would like to believe that if somebody smart had been advising Joe Paterno, and Joe Paterno, when Penn State canceled his press conference that week, which was when blood was really in the water, the media sharks were out then. They knew, oh, my God, there's separation between Penn State and Joe Paterno. Paterno's going down. If Joe Paterno had done an interview in his kitchen with Tom Rinaldi, who would have been eager to do that for ESPN at the time, and you know, charm the pants off of him and said, I don't remember what Mike told me. Let's find out what the truth of this is. And if that had bought even a week, of time, because one of the key elements of this whole thing is Penn State's playing their last home game of the year against Nebraska on ESPN that Saturday. So there's a pressure point. That's why everyone panics. If you get past that last home game, then I think there's at least enough time for rationality to have a chance, some facts to come out. Maybe we learn through the emails that, oh, by the way, McCreary got the date, the month, and the year totally wrong. If he got that wrong, what else did he get wrong? By the way, my good friend, the late, great Franco Harris, who did a podcast before he died, talking about confronting Mike McCreary at Joe Paterno's funeral about this situation, and asked him more pointed and direct questions than McCreary got asked at any other point in this entire case. And Franco Harris, a man of enormous moral authority, came away completely convinced that Mike McCreary had never seen anything close to a sexual assault. And if all that had had time to come out, I think Joe Paterno could have been salvaged. But it's a big if.
Yeah, great point on the timing. Had this happened in the off season, it would have been totally different. It was the urgency of, oh my God, this icon coach who may have been harboring and protecting a pedophile is going to be on television and coaching, and we're going to cover it. And of all the outlets, Ziegs, ESPN, the most righteous and wokest of them all.
Yes.
This was the perfect storm of, oh shit, this is not what you want to have to happen.
By the way, Steve, that timing was on purpose. That was contrived. The indictments were moved up in order to use the Nebraska game as leverage.
Sure. Yeah. And these are the things prosecutors and DAs do, because they're in the business of winning convictions, and they're trying to then elevate their career and get elected to higher positions. We saw this with the prosecutor, the scumbag down there in Durham, that tried to send a bunch of Duke lacrosse players to jail, maybe for life, over a complete fabrication out of political ambition. So many people, Ziegs, have a blind spot of understanding this, and it just drives me crazy. Okay, just to conclude here, so let's go to the victims who ended up testifying, who did not recant or change their story, and whose testimony was able to secure a conviction for Sandusky, and they have been paid compensation.
Yeah.
The one thing many people say to me is, yeah, fine about all that, but what about all the other victims? What's your concluding answer to that question?
If you don't believe Mike McCreary witnessed a sexual assault, which he did not, the evidence is overwhelming that he did not, if you do not believe that, then the rest of this case is a house of cards, because not one of these accusers, not one, could stand on their own. If they were the only accuser of Jerry Sandusky, every single one of their accusations would be scoffed at, because they have
They not have any good receipts or details or witnesses?
There is no contemporaneous report. There's no pornography. Okay. There's no payoffs. There's no nothing that normally comes with a child sex abuse case. These cases are very well understood. What happens is there's a contemporaneous report. They get a warrant for the laptop or the computer or the emails. They find proof of either pornography or the allegations themselves. And then there's a plea bargain and there's a confession. And this has 99.9% of these cases go this way. Jerry Sandusky, no pornography, no plea bargain, no confession. He's still appealing to this day. There has never been a serial child sex abuse case like this in American modern history because it didn't happen. It's all bullcrap.
Yeah. At that point, though, there was such an immense financial motivation.
They all made millions. Millions.
There was... Well, yeah, there was financial motivation, of course, by the accusers and their families and by the lawyers, but also there was financial motivation by the university to put a tourniquet on the financial bleeding. We gotta wrap this up.
It was not their money. It was not Penn State's money. They were giving away other people's money.
Right, exactly. So the motivation to just go, okay, fine, you know, boom, 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 boom.
Yes.
At that point, any real search for justice, I think, perhaps went out the window. Last note about all of this. So do you think anything has been learned by anybody? I applaud what you did with your very long pod. How many hours of In Benefit of Hindsight?
It depends on how you define it. There's probably about 70 to 80 hours of content. If you go and listen to With the Benefit of Hindsight, be careful. You're going to get hooked and you might get addicted because it's a remarkable story and it's incredibly important.
Did we learn anything? Did anyone learn anything?
My only benefit, this has destroyed my life. It's destroyed my career. It's put strain on my marriage. My wife thinks it's the dumbest thing I've ever done, even though she was the first person to tell me that Jerry Sandusky was innocent. She just knew. She's a school teacher. So she just had a sense about it. But I will say that one of the few benefits for me is I now feel like I've cracked the code for a whole lot of news stories that are similar. Not just sex abuse cases, but I have a better understanding of the way the news media is broken and the way humanity is fundamentally flawed than I ever had before this. So I feel like I've cracked the code for humanity and media incompetence. It hasn't done me any good, but I do feel as if I've learned a lot, and a lot of people have listened to With the Benefit of Hindsight have learned a lot about the way humanity works. I'll tell you where it really came in handy. The COVID panic. The COVID panic was so similar to the Sandusky panic. The only difference is the COVID virus was real. Jerry Sandusky was not a child sex abuser.
Yeah. They love Penn State. My visit up there really, and I just touched, I didn't even go on game day, John. I can imagine on game day, but walking through their, you know, sports museum, really got an appreciation of how much this whole thing had to have divided and wounded them. And it sort of struck me because they love their university and it's a significant, huge, important university for both sports and the state of Pennsylvania.
Weirdly, with some exceptions, Penn Staters are the worst consumers for this story because much like COVID, you know what they're like? They're like people that force their kids to mask up. They got their kids vaccinated. They had their kids miss 2 years of school, and they don't want to be forced to admit it was all over nothing. The Penn Staters are very much like people who bought into the COVID panic. They're the worst audience for the truth here.
Paterno Peach is in the creamery again, but the statue has gone missing. Solly jokingly said, "Yeah, have Ziegler." He does a Joe Pa voice. It's funny, but he said, "Yeah, have Ziegler look for the statue. How do you lose a statue? Where is the statue? Will it ever come back?"
You know what? I'm pretty well connected to the Penn State community, and I've never heard a good theory as to where the hell the statue is. But I don't think we're ever going to see it again. It probably does not exist.
Yeah. All right. John, and by the way, if you want more on how these narratives get formulated and promulgated, something like that. If you want to understand more about the way, quote, journalism happens today, follow John's podcast called The Death of Journalism. It is not a pick-me-up for those who like the truth or a scientific inquiring method to understanding the world as it exists. It's not a happy podcast because I've listened to it. It's depressing, but it is instructive and it can help you be a little bit smarter discerning these things when the stories start to formulate and when the story is too good or too juicy or too lucrative financially to even check whether it's true, that's when you got to look out.
Thank you for caring about the truth, Zeg.
Well, there you go. I knew Ziegs could not stay within the 20-minute boundaries of what I had set out, but that's okay. Went a little bit longer. And again, if you skip this, you're not listening right now, but for those that skipped it, that's fine. I just do believe it's important to go back and to say, okay, now that this has happened, so we understand perhaps how to not make the same jumps to conclusions that we've done before. What really happened here? And why did it happen? And what was I thinking as just somebody consuming the news or perhaps creating some of the commentary around the news? What was my thinking at the time? I know it's been instructive for me. So if you found it interesting, rate and review, send it to a friend, let people know. Oh yeah, if you were wondering, yeah, this is a good discussion about it's a bit more complicated than some people want to believe. And if not, that's fine as well. Thank you so much for listening and downloading, and have yourself a great Tuesday, and we will see you next time.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.